It's a Thursday edition of Bet the Board podcast, joined by the man you'll hear in a matter of minutes, Payne Insider. He of at Payne Insider on Twitter or PayneInsider.com. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can find my work at toddstake.com or just follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Payne, we follow up Monday's game between Seattle and Washington. We'll call it a bad beat for guys like ourselves that were sitting on the Redskins plus seven in that particular affair.
It's tough. I was looking for the push, but, throughout the course of the game, there were some fortunate things that went the Redskins' way. So it wasn't a total bad beat. I won't claim that, but, looks like once Gruden opened some things up down the field, realized that dinking and dunking wasn't the way to beat Seattle. Washington played a good game. They just got on the wrong end of what looked like in the second half a field position battle. And eventually it just wore out the defense, grinded them out a little bit, and it was tough to take. A little magic from Wilson, and unfortunately we don't get the cover.
Yeah, imagine that they couldn't establish the ground game. Apparently handing the ball off to Alfred Morris 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage wasn't the optimal game plan to keep Seattle's defense at bay. And as we do on every podcast, we'll be sure to preview the Thursday night game this evening featuring the Colts and the Texans. Colts a 2.5-point favorite as we start this pod, total of 46.5, but we'll get to that game as we look to wrap up. Shift our attention towards Sunday, Payne, and I'm going to throw it out there towards you as far as which game you want to start with, anything that's been curious as far as line movement, some of the injuries that are on the board, or the jockeying for position that we've seen on that lovely Denver Jets game.
Yeah, we can start there. Let's start with the Denver Jets game. Pretty interesting. Opened at Chris right around that 7. We saw some public money, obviously, early enter the market there, and I figured we'd land in that dead zone where we're at right now, but it did get as high as 10. We saw some resistance earlier in the day, and for me, it's kind of a little head-scratcher why the position would be taken at this stage in the week. Now, I know limits raise a little bit on Thursdays, but it just seems like a peculiar time to enter the market, and obviously it's tough if you're gonna back the Jets after the last few weeks, but I think if there was ever a time, and I've said that a couple weeks in a row now, this would be that time to back the Jets.
Yeah, we're a broken record when it comes to backing the Jets. It makes me wonder if my power number that I had on them coming into the year hasn't been adjusted fast enough. Of course, when you talk about X's and O's in this particular matchup, that Jets secondary will get tested. But situationally speaking, Denver, a couple of big games ahead. Can't imagine they're going to give their undivided attention to this particular contest. And it was this point last year, thereabouts, where the Jets were able to upset the New Orleans Saints as 6-point dogs. Of course, Denver a little bit more dynamic on both sides of the ball. As we record the pod, so there's two games that, or let's call it three games that don't have numbers out yet. Jacksonville, Tennessee, Detroit, Minnesota, Washington, Arizona. I think of that trio of games, though, the one that's most compelling for me is the handicapping angle you look to take in Detroit, Minnesota, where we're operating under the assumption right now that Calvin Johnson will be limited if he even tries to go, and that Teddy Bridgewater will be the starting quarterback for Minnesota. You at all surprised to see Detroit listed as a 1.5-point favorite here in Vegas, albeit a circled game?
This is pretty interesting because you have such a split dichotomy here when it comes to Detroit and their home road splits, and the same thing with Minnesota with their home road splits. And I think sometimes it'll throw things out of whack here. I know a lot of the math guys, they came to me with their numbers this week, and they installed Detroit a 2.5 to 3-point favorite. And for me, not even when you factor in Bridgewater, not even when you factor in Calvin Johnson, to me that seems like a ridiculous line just based upon what we've seen with how good Minnesota is at home and how lackluster Detroit's been on the road with the same staff, so to speak. I know you change over your coach, but your key elements are still there. And for me, it's an issue with Matt Stafford. Is this guy going to be able to perform in the fourth quarter? He's been an absolute dud there this season. And you're just not going to win games when your quarterback isn't performing up to task in the fourth quarter. So I'm pretty surprised. I think 1.5, where we currently see it at some places like stations, is probably a good number. And I think we'll see some sharp money on Minnesota at some point this week.
Yeah, it's a question, like we always discuss, when that sharp money will probably enter the market, of course. Always a big question for some of the bigger groups out there when they look at these games trying to figure out, you know, if enough shops have the price up that they don't want to try and tip their hand on a particular game. This one, like you said, one of the more fascinating contests given some of Stafford's struggles. And mind you, this is a Lions team that only mustered a grand total of 7 points from their offense last week at home against Buffalo, who was without some key contributors on the defensive side. I know we hit on Green Bay, Miami earlier in the week. I'm not sure if there's anything to really look to rehash there. But one game I did want to get into a little bit, we have a much better idea quarterback-wise who's going to be under center for the Oakland Raiders. We talked about Denver and the Jets being very lopsided, about 90% of the public action coming in on the road favorite. Very similar situation here unfolding. Tony Sparano makes his debut as head coach of the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I think Oakland obviously is going to be the sharp side at some point. The question becomes, what does this number really do? And when you're talking about that 4 p.m. time slot, Dallas-Seattle, I think we'll see some even action. Washington-Arizona, question marks with quarterback situations. So this really is going to be that bailout or double-up game for the public, and San Diego is going to be the side that they run to. So it won't shock me if this doesn't move very much at all. It even goes to 7.5, despite that being the sharp side. Carr looks like he's the guy. Now, I'm not in love with that situation. McGloin, if he was in, I think he's the more efficient quarterback. I think he's the better quarterback. You know, we'd be double shoving Oakland here as the play. But again, when you get Tony Sparano, a guy that I'm pretty familiar with, he's not a great X's and O's guy, but it's a guy that the players like. They're going to get up for him. They're going to play a physical brand of football behind him. And I think that bodes well when you talk about a San Diego team now on their fourth string center, a very key position on that offensive line. I think Oakland kind of reemerges, and I know Tony Sperano kind of buried the season, the 0-4 start, but I think this is a good spot to look for Oakland.
Yeah, power rating-wise, question there. I know we haven't talked extensively about injuries and exact valuations. We know that's a lot of the secret sauce to go into what some of the math guys, the professionals, do to try and create their edge. But when you look at the trio of quarterbacks on Oakland's roster, do you make an adjustment point spread-wise? Obviously, handicapping changes the dynamic a little bit between Derek Carr as the number one, let's call Matt McGloin the number two, and then Matt Schaub the distant third there, as far as the market will react.
You know, I don't think there's a ton between the quarterbacks, especially when you're talking about the market. For me, I have McGloin about a point and a half better than the other two quarterbacks you mentioned in Schaub and Carr. And it just seems like he's got a better grasp of the offense. The guys around him play a little better. He's more efficient. He's more accurate. So that, for me, you know, you just get a guy who's able to complete a few passes in there. Momentum starts to snowball. Guys start feeling confident. And when you talk about a veteran group, and they're not totally veteran, but you bring in guys like a Maurice Jones-Drew, you bring in a guy like Charles Woodson, you have Tuck left over there, and they're going to want to play for a guy that gives them a better chance. When you bring in Carr, it kind of dictates that this season's for the future, and you might not get peak performances from your veterans each and every week, but I think this is a spot where the veterans will come together and I think give a game effort here.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting. All the trends for folks that look to those sort of things, teams coming off the bye that are winless, especially catching a touchdown, usually an automatic play on situation. So sure that we'll see some money there from a handful of numbers, guys. And I don't want to jump around the board too much. When we look at this late time slot, you do have two games kicking off at 4:25 Eastern. Washington, Arizona, laden with questions as far as who will be the starting quarterback for the Cardinals. Logan Thomas was dreadful in his NFL debut outside of an 81-yard screen pass. We'll call it what it was, a dump off where Andre Ellington did the work. Of course, Carson Palmer gets in the mix. It changes that game. But rather focus on the other one since we've seen some interesting line movement on Seattle and Dallas. This game opened up at 8. You've seen a little bit of sharp money coming on the dog, but not much movement in the number. You did see a move on the total earlier today from 47.5 down to 46.5. What do you make of Seattle going home playing on a short week? And more importantly, maybe Dallas's power rating. Are they finally overvalued in the market as we started to see last week against the Texans?
This is a tough spot for me. I don't like to go against my information. We have seen some sharp guys come in on Dallas. For me, it's a lay it or don't play it situation. I think Seattle's a fantastic side this week to tease. This is a team in Dallas that I don't think will be able to have success on the ground like they've had recently, and that's going to change this offense dramatically. Tony Romo definitely looks healthier than he has been the last few weeks. I still don't think he's 100%. I think this is the type of game where if they aren't able to run the ball, their defense will be extremely exposed, and that's where I think this game is won, where Seattle's offense is able to kind of impose their power on Dallas's defense, and it'll make Dallas more one-dimensional than they've been in the past few weeks.
And I think you raised some great points. Seattle has always thrived in these opportunities, a chance for Russell Wilson and company to beat up on so-called elite competition. Jury's still out on Dallas. Again, the short week, cross-country travel. Who knows exactly where Seattle's focus will be, but I'd have to imagine that when you look at the Cowboys' record and where they're at, it changes the dynamic of this game completely, and I'm actually in agreement. Despite the information that we have, knowing who's playing the dog in this particular spot, it is indeed a lay-it-or-don't-play game. And one other contest that'll go on earlier, and I won't call it something that's going to catch national attention, but it's gotten a lot more compelling given results we saw last Sunday. New England on the road laying a soft 3 right now against Buffalo. Total in that game, 45. You know, what do we take away from what we've seen from the Patriots? Obviously seen opposite ends of the spectrum against Kansas City, where they were blown out on Monday night. They bounced back with a vengeance against Cincinnati this past Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's the whole knee-jerk reaction thing. You don't get too enamored or too caught up in what you see right away. New England, not as bad as they looked, obviously, on Monday Night TV against the Chiefs. Obviously not as good as they are when we saw them on Sunday night against the Bengals. So I think we see something in between here. For Buffalo, it looks like they found their guy for right now. Kyle Orton, extremely efficient last week, completed nearly 80% of his passes. I knew he threw a pick six. I went back and watched it. It's not on him. He just needs to get better weapons. And so I think that's where, extra couple weeks with the starting guys will get a little more cohesive with the receivers. Also on the defensive side of the ball, it looks like you get back Kyle Williams. It looks like you get back Nigel Bradham. So those are two huge additions to the Buffalo defense. And I think we won't see three come kickoff on Sunday.
Yeah, I wouldn't really argue that. Number definitely been trending downwards. And if you look at some of the look-ahead lines going into last week, New England and Buffalo actually real close to a pick of minus one in some spots. So you have seen the market rebound as far as public sentiment's concerned regarding the Patriots. And typically at this point in the show, we transition Payne into our now trending hashtag. Use AskBetTheBoard, where a lot of our loyal listeners and followers on Twitter, members of the community, can ask some questions of us. And I think this creates the perfect segue. As we look at Gavin L, he goes by the Twitter handle at Young Keek, asks the questions, do you guys think that the Eagles are a fraudulent 4-1 team? Which, of course, leads us to the Sunday night game, which will attract a lot of attention in the NFC East. Philadelphia, a heavy 2.5-point favorite. We'll call it a soft 3 as well. Total in this game at 50, but the Eagles' offense has been anything but explosive there each of the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I hate to use the word fraudulent, but they're very fortunate to be where they are right now. I think Chip Kelly is doing a lot with very little. The offensive line, extremely banged up. When you talk about this game, though, if there was ever a spot for them to kind of rebound, so to speak, this would be it. The Giants stock at this point could not be any higher. We have seen some, slight resistance. It opened 3. It's gone below that key number. But we have seen a little money come in on Philadelphia. You're looking back at a soft 3 at places like the Greek and Chris. Very sharp. I think when you break down this offense, I think they get a little healthier this week on the offensive line. They're getting two guys back. I think that will help. But when you talk about Philadelphia in general, some of the defensive numbers we like to look at, I think, are skewed just a little bit. We'd like to take about 15% of their defensive numbers and kind of just remove that from the equation based on how they play offensively. I don't think the defense is as bad as people think. Really, right now, it's on the offense. They've scored 13 points the last 2 weeks combined on that side of the ball, on drives that they've initiated, not where the special teams or the defenses set them up in a great spot. But I think this would be a decent spot for Philadelphia to rebound a little bit here.
It should be interesting. I'm curious to see where this number ends up settling. Finally, it appears that the public jumping on that bandwagon, a chance to fade Philadelphia. As we saw last week, St. Louis, a 7-point dog at the peak. He needed to get the key number of 6.5 or 7 to cash that ticket. Did close 3.5, so it will be interesting to keep tabs here. For all the new listeners just tuning into the podcast for the first time, hoping that we were going to break down the San Francisco-St. Louis game on Monday night. That'll come on Monday, as we typically do when we preview next week and we look back at the week that was. To reset for everyone right now, the gentleman on the other end of the line, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can see his outstanding work at PayneInsider.com. I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can find my work, Todd'sTake.com. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. Or if you're more of a college football fan, you can watch us on College Football Countdown to Kickoff on Fox Sports 1. And Payne, some pretty good questions came in this week using the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. And let's start at the top with Daniel, goes by the Twitter handle, and I'm going to butcher it, D. Divich, asking, what percentage as far as ROI do the sharp guys seek over the course of an entire season?
it just depends on what you're trying to do. I really think, again, it goes back into understanding who you are as a bettor, understanding what type of bettor you are, looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, hey, this is realistic for me, this is realistic for sharp guys. And the sharp guys, Roy, will be a little different. It'll be a little skewed based on how they bet. Because they're betting so many games, because they're taking games with half a percent edge and taking games with 3 or 4% edge, it's going to be dramatically different. I think, again, when you're looking at what types of bets you're making, the percentages and return on investments need to be differentiated, meaning you need to have a return on investment with your smaller plays, with your medium plays, with your big plays, and kind of spread them out, meaning gauge them differently, and I think that's kind of the key. And again, what type of bettor you are should definitely, I would say, temper your expectations on what type of return you're looking on in your investment.
Well, and I think, too, when you look at this, I mean, you'll see a lot of people out there promising 200-300% return, which obviously we know is ridiculous. Coming from a casino background, from my perspective, you look at it very differently. I mean, table games and slots are measured with slightly different metrics. Slot machines typically coin in that the money continues to roll over and recycle. So it's going to be a lot different than table games. And I think when you look at someone using a $1,000 hypothetical bankroll and you end the season at plus 1,500, you know, do you look at that as a 50% return on your initial investment? Or do you look at how many times you had to roll over the $1,000 in terms of creating some risk and liability? I would typically say, you know, somewhere in that ballpark of, you know, 5 to 8% is an outstanding year if you're rolling your money over and trying to calculate things along those lines.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think it's probably a safe estimate, and I don't think people really grasp when we talk about sports how big of a number that is. And for me, I like to use it based on other markets when you're looking at housing, when you're looking at the stock market, when you're looking at, you know, just a general investment. When you're getting right now, what, 1-1.5% at the very, very most in some type of CDs and savings account, it just, when you're talking sports betting, I think everyone thinks that it's much easier to turn a profit than it really is, and it's really just a slow grind. And I think for the casual bettor and even sharp guys, I think you're probably right when you talk about a rollover percentage. You're right in that 5-8%, which is a fantastic season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to have realistic expectations. And the reality of it is a lot of people out there are betting this purely for recreation. So when you try and figure out your ROI and what you're trying to accomplish, you know, don't look at it any different. If you're putting $300 into action on a typical Sunday, you may go 1-2. But if you're going to play a fancy round of golf, you may get better return on your sports dollar for longer entertainment. Which kind of leads into a next question we had that came from Mr. Parlay on Twitter, at Mr_Parlay. You know, what are your three most important rules as far as money management is concerned?
I think it's a little different, again, for me than it is for most people. You know, when we talk about some of the games that we're on and that we're betting, you know, I think I use it a little more loosely than what I would advise other people doing. Obviously, you're not going to be betting more than you can afford to lose. You're not betting, you know, have some type of money set aside for your bankroll. These aren't things that are going into your daily bills and activities like that. You're not using your bankroll and your money management, you know, calculated into what your mortgage payments are, your cell phone bill, whatever that is. So those are some things that I look to use. Now, again, for me, I would use a spread amount for if you're just a regular bettor, maybe one to two spread based on not being able to maybe gauge how large your edge is. Once you become better and well-versed in kind of figuring out what your edge is, then you can spread it out and have a larger bet spread. So things like that, I think, are important to gauge for rules of money management. And I think right now, when you're starting off, I don't encourage flat betting, but until you're able to really gauge what your edge is on some of these games and factor in what information really, really matters, it's better off going more conservative.
Yeah, I mean, I think the name of the game is trying to stay in the business a lot longer, so there's no sense creating a, you know, 1 to 10 position spread on a lot of these contests unless you can truly identify the edges you allude to. Better off using it as a learning curve, and the longer you spend in the game, you'll be getting to recognize situations that you can't always put your finger on, but that'll create profitable spots. I guess one other great question that came up as well that came from Zach, goes by at DeltaBravo888 on Twitter. Is too much information on a game a bad thing? Do you ever bet something and all of a sudden have a bad feeling about it? Before you jump in, I will say that, you know, you and I trade techs. We lead it into going watching these games, whether they be college or pro. You start to see lines go one way or the other, and I think that gut instinct really does play a role. But Zach, obviously interested in getting your thoughts on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think we get a bad feeling sometimes when you start to see a line go against you, or you start to see opposition from different groups on specific sides. For me, though, I mean, it'd be more so when you watch a game like the Jets and you're 5 minutes into the game, you're like, this has no absolute chance. So, you know, that's when I start to have a bad feeling about a bet. But I think the first question there is too much information on a game bad. And I think that there's no such thing. I really don't. I think, again, being able to gauge that information and how important the information is in determining your edge, that's the key there, because I don't think too much information is ever bad. But being able to decipher what type of information has an advantage, has an edge, should be incorporated in your game, is the key to that. That's my biggest thing on information.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think I'll agree with some of those points and I'll disagree on others. I'm a big fan of paralysis by analysis, especially for some gamblers that are just getting started, trying to figure out exactly which is the most useful stuff. And that, of course, a skill like anything else comes with time. I mean, so much of this is condensing what you receive, distilling it down, consolidating it, and then making a concise choice to try and figure out where your best opportunity will come from. And if you're looking at a number of disparate sources, you're going to get conflicting information. Trend's the prime example for anyone who uses a lot of trend analysis. You can always find a trend to either prove or disprove a particular angle on a game. So we encourage people, like anything else, you know, as bettors, we're all creatures of habit, and I think you have to try and figure out an approach that works for you, and that, like anything else, is going to come over time. It won't happen the first time you bet a game or by week four of the NFL season that you'll be able to figure everything out and know exactly what all that information means.
That makes some sense. I'm not a big trend guy, so I don't really incorporate or factor a lot of that into what I'm doing. For me, it's a lot about the information and gathering of that information. And I think a lot of it's readily available to a lot of the people out there, but I've kind of always said you could give an article or give a piece of information to 100 different people, and one person might be able to decipher or pick something out of there that really gives them an edge. Well, someone else is looking at the same exact piece of information, and he isn't able to do that. So for me, that's the big thing. Not a huge trend guy, so I don't even really factor that into really anything that I do information-wise.
Gotcha. And I think reading comprehension is a great point, though. It not only applies to sports betting, but when you're doing your research for the financial markets, and all of us that have gone through standardized testing, there are clearly nuggets that are much more useful than others that you can apply to, you know, trying to take things away and figuring out exactly where your edge may come. Which leads us into the last part of the show, and that's the Thursday night game between the Colts and Texans, one of the trickier games on the board to figure out. And I'll call it one of the more difficult games on a Thursday night, with, like we said, Indy a short 2.5-point favorite, total of 46.5 by all indications in the books I've spoken to. 3 out of every 4 bets coming in on the road favorite Colts. And I don't want to call it the pseudo-sharp side, but it does appear to be the Houston Texans here. Interested to know what kind of information is filtered into you down there in South Beach.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed it. I don't think it's going to be a strong position from any of the professionals on Houston. I think they'll number grab some of the 3. Indianapolis looked good last week. Obviously, this is a team that's predicated right now on one man. It's the anti-Jets, and we've talked about those two teams being extremely tough to gauge. I know sharp guys are not fond of Indianapolis, but they continue to cover spreads based upon what Andrew Luck is able to do. He really makes this team extremely tough to gauge. Right now, my number on this game is 3. I can't take 2.5. There are some 3s out there. I know we've seen some over money at 45. As the market continues to evolve towards the over, those numbers start to become more and more important. We talked about 43 being key, the head honcho of key numbers last year on NFL totals. Right now, they're starting to tick up a little bit. 45 is becoming more key, and so we've seen some over money there. I don't disagree with it, but right now when you're looking at 46.5, 47, not a ton of wiggle, especially when you talk about a short week, condensed game plans, in that familiar approach with division foes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo some of those same sentiments. I think this is a tougher game to handicap, one that I definitely won't have a position on unless something drastically changes here. You talk about the Colts and exactly how the sharp guys have viewed them. I will make the case that watching Indianapolis a lot closer over the last couple weeks, I've been more impressed with their defense. I think they don't get enough credit on that side of the ball. What they did to Baltimore in terms of getting off the field on third down spoke volumes. And despite not having some big names, it may be an adjustment that I need to make in terms of how I view Indy moving forward. But Payne, before we close up shop, any parting remarks for our loyal listeners out there tuning into Bet the Board podcast, whether it's their 10th or 12th episode they've tuned in, I don't know how many we've done exactly, or if it's the first time they're jumping on board?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's probably, I think this is our 11th version of this podcast. Right now, I would just keep an eye on the board right now. I think, not to give the entire farm away, but you continue to look at sides this week like Miami, monitor that side, monitor the Buffalo side, and monitor the Oakland side. And I think that'll probably land you in some decent spots come Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's always an evolving market, as you said. It should be fascinating to try and see. I will report from the sportsbook side last weekend, their worst of the NFL season, only compounded by Monday night, where every teaser, no matter the permutation, came through. And, of course, that late field goal by Seattle, that even if you were forced to lay 7.5, did push that number up. For Payne Insider, I'm your co-host, Todd Furman. You can find his work, again, at Payne Insider on Twitter, at PayneInsider.com. Find my work at ToddsTake.com. More importantly, best of luck this weekend, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.